All right, Tiff, have you stretched out your quads and prepared your thumbs for flicking because it's the Office Olympics?
I have been lifting reams of paper for like a week. I'm so ready. These guns are blazing.
Oh, that's oh man, I could practically feel the energy. I've just been like downing huge glasses of protein shake and doing not much else. I hope that'll work.
I am so pumped and ready for this episode.
This is episode 3 of season 2. It's Office Olympics. And this is a fun episode where we have what we would call while the cat's away, the mice will play.
Ooh, nice one.
But they will play a game they actually want to play, because like when Michael's there, they still play, but they just play the things he wants to play. And so this is an opportunity for the office to just get to kind of do them and not have to worry about Michael ruining things.
Yes. So this is like has a great little cold opener about Ryan coming in early just to basically bring Michael a sandwich, which is utterly ridiculous and hilarious. But the whole episode is packed full of great, hilarious lines. It's really, really fun, lighthearted episode. Nothing super serious happens. And I think we should definitely go into this talking about the A plot and the B plot, because this episode is very distinctly kind of set up in these two ways where Dwight and Michael go off in one direction and the rest of the office stays behind. And so we see both of their days simultaneously.
And I think they're purposely meant to juxtapose, because in many ways you see the office is having a lot of fun, and we sort of have this laughing moment, and then we cut away to Michael maybe not having the best time. And then later on, Dwight even makes a reference to the office having a boring day, and we cut back and they're having a great day. And so this is purposely set up to sort of give you a back and forth approach, I think, between the two stories.
I like when we get to see outside of the office a little bit. You know, I really enjoy those episodes. So basically, to start off, the B plot is Dwight and Michael going off to sign the paperwork for Michael's first real estate purchase, and he's buying a condo.
He starts out the show very, very pumped about the fact that he's going to have his own place. And, you know, it's funny, Michael, again, we talk about this a lot, I think, but Michael has very clear ideas for what I think success is and what happiness is and where he should be in his life. And so the big grand idea of being able to purchase one's own home is so much more important to him than anything else. And it's a bit of a blessing, but also a curse, that Dwight says, hey, I would love to come along with you and sort of be a consultant and help you out trying to figure out what's going on.
Associate.
Yeah, associate. And Michael is like, at first Michael wants him to stay back. And I think that, you know, again, this sort of shows their relationship together. But they do end up becoming quite the dynamic duo. But before they leave, I did want to talk about this little moment, because
it's Mozart and Butch Cassidy, right?
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. That is such a great, great little bit too. He's like Mozart, and I'm like Mozart's friend.
Friend.
But to talk about Michael's desire to perform in front of the camera and be this, you know, important person who looks businessman-like and this, that, and the other, we have a moment where Michael is asking Pam if she switched over all of his magazine subscriptions, which, first of all, that is not Pam's job, Michael Scott. You're at risk of shutting down. The branch is at risk of being closed, and you're having your receptionist switch over your subscriptions. Ridiculous.
Like a personal assistant. It's glorifying Michael's own position of that he feels that he's more important than he actually, you know, he's a regional manager. He isn't like an executive.
Yeah, this is not an assistant that he is hired himself, or that the company has hired to help take some stress off of him so that he can do other things. She has a job to do that does not involve this. But he ends up naming sort of his magazines. And the point is that Pam sort of makes it clear that his subscription, one of the subscriptions, is a Cracked magazine subscription. And Michael realizes with the cameras there, it sounds like he's just reading that magazine, which is not very very businessman.
It's not very highbrow.
There you go, highbrow.
We also see the whole relationship between Dwight and Michael, and Dwight essentially being like, the hanger-on puppy dog, like trying to be involved in Michael's life. But at the same time, Dwight does actually have a lot of knowledge and info to provide Michael in this particular situation, because we find out in this episode, is this where we find out that he has a farm?
Yes, this is the first episode where we find out about the beet farms, the farm.
60-acre beet farm?
Yep.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah, because I wrote that down. I was like, this is where Dwight reveals his 60-acre beet farm.
That's some really good trivia, actually, if we ever host a... I just had a good idea.
Oh, get ready. Buddy. Oh,
open up the good idea folder.
It's time to drop something in.
And we're going to put in good idea to have a... If we ever do anything live, to have a Dunder Mifflin trivia.
Oh, my
night.
Lord. You and I versus each other.
Well, not even us, like just if we get a whole bunch of people, like I'm talking about like live, like because you know how other podcasts do like live shows and stuff. How would we do a live show?
Oh, we could do
a trivia night all about The Office.
Oh, that would be so fun.
Okay, I'm really excited about
and
that.
And we can have like, if we do it like live, in person. Or something, we can have, you know, themed drinks. We can have Michael's screwdriver, except he calls a different name.
Okay. WWDC next year. Oh my gosh. Okay. Keep this in the show so we remember and everyone gets excited. Okay.
There you go.
What are we talking about?
This is whenever we first hear about Dwight's 60-acre beet farm.
And we also hear about his cousin Moe's. So,
We see the photo of his cousin Moe's, who is one of the lead writers on the show.
Is he really?
Mm-hmm.
That is so funny because he is such a great character. Yeah. So I love that we get a fleshed out version of Dwight. We're seeing him really know something. He's not just kind of a fool. That's what this show, all of the characters become endearing to me, because they aren't all just fools. They all do foolish things at times, but they have substance and they have validity behind them. And I love being able to see that. So we see Dwight in that he has a very large estate farm that he lives on. I mean, how many rooms, bathrooms? He said 9 bathrooms or something, or 9 bedrooms.
Lord. Yeah, it's bedrooms because he only has the one bed, one bathroom that's under the porch.
That's right. 9 bedrooms, 1 bathroom. So we're seeing that Dwight actually has like this very full, rich farm life outside of the work in the office, when before it almost felt like everything about the office was all he had.
Mm-hmm.
And now we know that there's a whole other secret life to Dwight that we are only just now breaking the surface of.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I want to pull back for a second to talk about something that you just pointed out. You were talking about how Dwight is fleshed out as a real character, even more so. And we know that he's not just sort of this person that, you know, does things wrong and Michael doesn't really care for, but pretends to sometimes. We got a tweet from listener Leighton Smith talking about a list that someone put together about Pam, and it lists all these bad things that Pam did across the course of the show. And Pam is generally seen as sort of a positive character, and people tend to like Pam. And these things are, you know, negative things that could give you a different opinion of Pam. And as I was reading that, I was like, oh, wow, yeah, I forgot about all those things that happened. And then I started to think about the fact that many of the things that, you know, were on this list were very, very, very human things, were very realistic things that real people who are flawed would do. And I just gained like another layer of appreciation for the writers and producers of this show, because they really do make real characters. And you could take any character in the show and write a list of all the bad things that they've done, because these characters are flawed, but they also are very strong. They are very skilled in the things that they're good at. And that's what we're seeing right now, is this Dwight character being so much more than what we expected.
Yeah, they have that fleshed out backgrounds to them, and I feel like almost every character has at least some substantial personal information about them that gets revealed during the show.
Absolutely.
And it's just beautiful. One of my favorite things in the very beginning of this show, this particular episode, is when Michael and Dwight do get to the condo. Michael starts showing Dwight where he's going to be living. He starts off and is admiring the tree in front and talking about his children growing up there. Michael always has these very... grand ideas of his future and where he's going to be and how successful he's going to be and all the life he's going to have. But anyway, as he's ruminating about like all these wonderful things about his condo, he realizes, oh, that's not the right one. It's the one behind me. I love that moment because it just shows it in a very funny, real moment. It shows and highlights the generic nature of a lot of condo complexes, especially like in the Midwest and various areas where they've just built up, you know, all of these condo communities or like housing communities. And Michael can't even figure out which one he was supposed to be buying. Like it just, and I love that. That's so American to me.
It's a two-parter because you do get that critique of these cookie cutter homes. And you also get that critique of Michael where he is like so much of the things that he says, there's not necessarily conviction behind it. There's just like, I know this is the thing that I should be saying right now. This is the way that I should be feeling about something. And he was like talking about the connection that he had with this place. And it was just going to be this great thing. And there's no way that he was connected, because if he was, he would have known at the jump that that was not the right place. Exactly. So it's like a twofer. And I love that.
All right. So that was the B plot as we started off. So let's go back to the A plot and talk about where we are in the office.
Yeah. I mean, basically, you know, we start with Jim being a little bored.
Sorry,
I forgot. I guess he died.
Jim literally dies of boredom.
He died of boredom because they have to fill out expense reports. And I like the way that he sort of, I didn't notice this before, that he was like taking a tour through the office. In my mind, it was just like, we are not doing things. And then suddenly we're doing Office Olympics. But really, he's going around bouncing from place to place in the office to figure out how different people entertain themselves. And Pam, her game, which I think is a little bit not cool, don't mess with my drinks, but Pam decides that when Dwight leaves his desk, she will throw things into his cup of coffee, which is, of course, across the room.
I think it's okay. When you put it that way and you think about someone ruining someone else's coffee, that does kind of stink.
Yeah, but like maybe swallowing a paperclip and how dangerous that could be.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But I really like those Amy games. I'm going to be throwing something into a cup. Like,
okay, so I see note the to appeal. Self, if I'm ever around Tiff, cover my cup.
Well, I wouldn't do it to a fresh drink. I'm not an animal. But like a mostly done cold cup of coffee, sure.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. Like if I know the person's not going to be drinking it anymore and I can have a laugh with them whenever they see like a tabletop, what is that called? A ping pong ball floating in their cup of coffee. That's funny. But if it's something that they're going to keep drinking, there's no way I could do that.
I do want to mention that it's Pam's job to help Jim when he is bored. It's her job to revive him, as she says, right, when he dies of boredom in the office. So I love, again, we get to have that great glimpse of Pam's fun side, that she is not just the person that's tagging along on the practical jokes.
Right.
She initiates a lot of them. And as you say, even though it is kind of mean to be throwing things into Dwight's coffee, like she's just as pranky as Jim is. And when Jim returns from his, stroll through the board games of the office.
Stroll through Candyland.
Yeah. He takes his little survey of everybody. She's just on board with starting the Olympics as everybody else is.
Yes. Like she's ready to go whole hog, ready to help make it happen. As Jim's going around and talking to everybody, we learn about a whole bunch of different games, including mm-hmm. Oscar and Kevin having quite the involved game called, involved meaning that it goes back several years. It's Oscar and Kevin playing Hate Ball. Now, why is it called Hate Ball again?
Because Angela hates when we play it.
And the look on her face is so great. It's so great when they cut to her. And I've been watching Angela Kinsey and her husband. They do a baking show. And I think we've talked about it before. She is so much different in real life than her character on The Office. And so thinking of her like pulling that face and knowing who she is actually, I imagine that was a very difficult face to hold for as long as it took to get that cut. And so it just makes it that much funnier because she's hilarious and sweet and bubbly, and her character is not.
Yeah, I used to follow her on Instagram too, and I absolutely loved it, that her being the actress. And yeah, the camera, every single time they catch all those little looks that every character seems to like shoot across the room at different times. And it's especially great with Angela and how she just always is rolling her eyes at what everyone's doing in the office. It is just brilliant because it tells so much of the story of everyone's relationships and the type of people that all of these characters are than really an entire episode could. Because these episodes are very short. They're very dense and we get so much out of them because we haven't really seen a whole bunch of the relationship between Oscar and Kevin and Angela as they sit over there in accounting. But in this episode, we kind of get a really good sense of who they all are.
Yeah. And that sort of is telling in the games that they play too. So that was the first game. And then, Jim, of course, wants to talk to Stanley and we see more of Stanley's sort of grumpy personality because he says, yeah, I know a game. It's called Work Hard So My Kids Can Go to College. And it's so good. The just sort of the look, again, the look on Jim's face, the way that Stanley just immediately goes back to work, the camera sort of, it's almost if there were crickets in the background. It was so great.
But then we see Stanley participating in all the games. So, I mean, come on, Stanley. He does like a little fun. He also likes avoiding work. But he also doesn't like goofing.
Yeah, maybe it was just not the time for him to play. Like that was whenever he was, you know, in the midst of working. But as soon as he got it all done, then he wanted to play. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the fact that Toby is involved? I think it's weird that HR is doing something that HR would like go. They give seminars on time theft and in very small ways. And so for Toby to actually be participating in this gigantic group time theft, it just seems out of character.
Yes, but I mean, we do kind of get to see the fun side of Toby here and there. And honestly, as I think most of the characters find a way of saying, this job isn't that hard.
That's true.
So I feel like they're all getting work done, but then there's just no extra time. Like, what else are you going to do? You know?
Yeah, that's true. He's probably got everything done already. And I forget that he, despite being in HR, I'm sure he doesn't mind the opportunity to stick it to Michael, which is essentially what they're all doing in a way by not doing any work.
Michael is out of the office, so I guess Toby doesn't have anything to do right now.
fair. That's a good point. So that pretty much wraps up the games at the front of it. We've got Toby playing Dunderball, which is where you sort of throw a ball up over the separator and try and catch it. And we find out that that's the sound that you hear a lot in the day, which means that they really do have a lot of downtime at work, it seems.
I wonder if there's any episodes where subtly in the background that noise is.
Oh, no.
I think we should look out for that because that would be really very smart.
Yes. Oh, man. Now I have to go back. Oh, that's a good point. Let's go ahead and cut away again to the B plot really quickly, just to talk about sort of where we are now. Michael, Dwight, they're there. This is where we see Dwight finally really showing his know-how, I think, and his skills and saying like, okay, you know, this is the mortgage that you're going to work with. This is exactly what this means. Check it out. There are carpenter ants here. Like he's going all around and finding
thin
all the
walls,
things.
Very thin walls. Neighbors.
Don't put your TV on this wall. I mean, there are so many different things that he notices. And I think there's a little bit of trivia that you want to share with everybody about this.
There is. So in this scene, in the B plot here, we meet Michael's real estate agent and the head of the condo board. And as it turns out, the real estate agent, who is Carol Stills, she is portrayed by Steve Carell's actual wife, Nancy. And I thought that was really cool because I didn't know that until today.
Oh, awesome.
You knew that? Did you know?
Yeah, that one I knew. And I don't remember. Oh, I was watching Michael Scott. I was watching a Steve Carell interview a while back and he was talking about his wife. And so I was like, oh, I'm curious who his wife is. I looked it up. I was like, oh my goodness, that's Carol.
That's awesome. They've been married since 1995.
Isn't that so sweet?
Oh. I love when celebrities are like together for a long time.
Me too. And they own a general store.
Wow. All this trivia is very good.
I just think that's adorable. Like, I want to go to Michael Scott's general store.
So we get to see Carol and we see Michael have a bit of a panic attack over a 10 over 30 mortgage, because as Dwight puts it, he says that Michael's basically purchasing his coffin at this point if he has a 30 year mortgage. It is so grim, because I mean, when would he, if he was keeping on schedule, he would pay it off when he was like in his 70s, which is, for a condo, that feels terrifying.
Yeah, that's not a good deal.
So this definitely gives Michael some serious cold feet.
Whenever he pulls the thing off of the stove that's supposed to come off, but he sort of uses that as a means to like, I need to step away. And so he goes away, and we cut back again, as we were talking about the juxtaposition between the two, we cut back to the office and we're having a great time. We've got Jim announcing that the office Olympics are underway with a scented candle, and Pam, Pam, as crafty as she is, has put together these medals out of yogurt lids and paper clips.
It's so good. I love Pam in this episode, because we really get to see her crafty, creative art side coming out, because later on she creates something wonderful for the closing ceremonies. And so we're really seeing her take on this kind of, she's just so creative in this episode, and I really like it.
And they all end up sort of getting to show their creativity in a big way in coming up with these games and in participating in the different parts and just having a good time. Meanwhile, you know, Michael is having his freak out, and Carol finally gives him an ultimatum, like, yo, you're going to lose $7,000, so you better just buy this place. And he doesn't. Then him and Dwight just sort of hang out and think that everything's fine, and it's not fine. We can tell it's not fine.
We have them kind of celebrating, but then Michael tries to convince Dwight to rent his extra room, because now Michael's panicking on how much money he's going to be paying for his condo. And there's a lot telling in this situation, because Michael starts pitching it to Dwight and how great it would be and how you can just, you know, give me $500 a month plus utilities and, like, you know, trying to get him to rent this room.
And a 4-year commitment, for the love of God.
Yeah, he's trying to give him these terrible terms. So Dwight rebuttals with asking a whole bunch of increasingly insane questions. And so the way Dwight does this, at first you think it's Dwight being weird. But then as the questions start getting more and more telling of how weird, like, Dwight keeps giving these little looks at the camera and implying things. And so we eventually find out that Dwight is asking all of these strange and bizarre and off-putting requests to Michael about moving in. It's because Dwight has absolutely no interest in actually moving in, because he has his own farm, like, and his own paintball range.
He's good.
Archery range. Like, yeah, there's like a whole, he loves his life and he does not want to move in with Michael. But yet he can't just say no to Michael. You know, he doesn't.
He makes himself sound or seem foolish or bizarre instead of just saying, no, Michael, I don't want to live with you.
Yeah, he forces Michael to rescind the offer by being annoying on purpose, but he can't just say no to it, because either he's trying to spare Michael's feelings, or he actually can't say no to Michael because of the way he feels about him in kind of a boss situation, or the respect he has, or I don't know what it is, but it's definitely telling about their relationship that Dwight just can't just honestly tell his friend and boss that he does not want to move in with him.
Yeah.
You know, he has to go through this elaborate dance in order to get Michael to be like, no, never mind, I'm taking it back. You can't move in with me because you're too weird. which is exactly what Dwight wanted in the first place. So, you know, what is that? What do you think that is?
I didn't notice that Dwight was doing a bit. And like, it took me a couple watches over time. You know what I mean? Like, this was a more recent revelation through one of my rewatches. And so, you know, I was expecting it more this time. So I got to see even more of the detail of it. And I really do think that it is, we see time and time again, Dwight continues to be good to and be friends with and be kind and be thoughtful toward Michael, no matter what Michael does. And so right now, you know, if I was thinking of how Dwight is thinking about the situation, he knows that Michael is having a tough go of things, just having bought this condo. He probably pities him a little bit because he did buy his coffin. Mm-hmm. And Dwight, you know, is eating with him, and Michael's talking about how it's such a great thing, da 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 da. And you know that Dwight's sitting there like, no, but it's really not such a great thing. But I'll say yes, because, you know, it makes you feel better. So I think that this is just an extension of that. If Dwight were to just say no, then that's going to make Michael feel even lower than he already does. And for some reason, Dwight cares more about Michael than to let him feel lower than he already does.
He even later on goes to suggest, as they're in the car on the way home, like a little bit later, he tells him, like, look, the mortgage isn't that bad. You can always refinance, or you can pay it off early. Like, he was giving him all these options of how he can make this better. And they were all true, legitimate options. He was actually giving good friend advice to somebody, again, like displaying that he does have some knowledge in this area, and that he wanted to encourage Michael in a way that, like, don't feel so bad about this. You made a good decision. Like, you can alleviate a lot of the bad stuff that is associated with it.
And Michael, again, sort of attacks him in his beet farm. And
nobody likes beets, Dwight.
Oh, you should grow candy. I could really use a piece of candy right now. But it's a little bit upsetting because Dwight just continues to be good to Michael, even though Michael continues to be a turd to him.
So should we go back to the office, to our A-plot?
Yes.
I really do love how everyone in the office during the games in general, regardless of Angela's bitterness, everyone really gets into it. Like, everyone jumps on the wagon. Everyone wants to compete for one of these yogurt lid medals, and you're seeing people come up with different games, and they're fooling around. Like,
this is where Phyllis really starts to, like, this is the beginning of the blossoming of Phyllis, which is exciting.
We get to see Phyllis's fun side. We see Stanley jumping in. We even see Ryan kind of participating for kind of the first time. He's usually staying on the sidelines during a lot of the fun antics in the office because, you know, he was just the temp and he doesn't want to get involved. But yet we see him getting involved. And so that's what I really like about this episode. Everyone's kind of coming together and having this fun, goofy day when Michael's not around.
See, and that's the thing is Michael ends up being divisive in the early episodes, especially, and they have a better time when he's not around. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we see Oscar and Toby are, this is a brilliant game. And I think that I wish I know who came up with it. They are holding basically nearly full cups of coffee and they're having to run around an obstacle course. And that's just such a good game because that's so office and so Olympic. It's just perfect. But Michael and Dwight, you know, appear from having left their sale and everything like that. And then everybody just immediately goes back to their desks and, like, quiets down, and nobody's talking, nobody's playing the games anymore, nobody's laughing, nobody's having a good time. But Jim wants to keep going. And so it's this awkward moment of him just standing there. And what that to me is I don't know. I'm curious what you took of that. Is that Jim saying, in spite of the concern that Michael might have for this situation, I'm still doing this? Or was that Jim saying, I think that Michael wouldn't be bothered by us playing these games in the office?
I think it's a testament to Jim's commitment to this activity, because just like Pam mentions in the episode, she does a little psychoanalysis of Jim where it's like when he cares about something deeply, he puts his whole heart and mind into it. He really focuses on it and makes it as good and as he could possibly make it, right? Mm-hmm. But when he is unmotivated, like, there's not much there. And he is not motivated by his job, because as he says, it came up in the episode about how he pretty much finished the expense reports in 5 minutes and closed 2 sales at lunch. So he's like, even though we goofed off all day, I got all this stuff done. So showing that the job isn't really that hard for him. It's not a challenge. So when he is playing these games and he's setting up this thing, he's feeling so fulfilled and he's so mentally committed. I think that the idea that Michael coming back interrupting the game. It shouldn't be a thing because he wants to just finish it. He was like, you can't just stop in the middle of a game. Like, you need to get your medals and then we need to do this closing ceremonies. Like, he wanted to complete the task that he set out for himself that day.
That's a fair read of the situation. And in fact, we see Jim still push through bullheaded and make it happen in a different way, in a clever way. Again, Jim sort of knowing how different people react to things and knowing the best way to make whatever he needs to happen happen. Mm-hmm. He invites Michael to, he goes to Pam and has her get everything ready, but then he invites Michael to come out to the closing ceremonies. And
yeah, he's very resourceful with this because he integrates Michael into the closing ceremonies so that the office can, everyone who was there all day can have the satisfaction of finishing off the Olympics that they had done all day. But Michael gets integrated in a way because it's playing to Michael's ego, right? And it's saying,
exactly,
look, congratulations for doing this great big thing. You know, it's almost demeaning if Michael would take it in a different way because it's like a very clever parent manipulating around like different age groups of children to make everyone happy, you know?
And
like,
yes,
that's how I am reading the situation. It's like a really good teacher who's like, oh, you know, you have this need and you have this need and you have this need. Let's spin this story for three different ways. And yet it's still the same ending to the story for everybody. And it's just, and that it does, it shows Jim's resourcefulness. It shows him being thoughtful. It shows him being a very people person. Like, he understands where everyone's coming from and what they need, and it displays he would be a very good manager because that's exactly what he's doing in this scene, is he's managing everyone to get the outcome that he wants.
Yes. And I think the only problem that I have with the closing ceremonies is that Phyllis should be in third place, not Jim.
Oh, yes. She totally should. She should have been up there.
Yeah. But other than that, it was very clever, and the doves appear and everything's nice and Michael bawls.
He does. He starts crying. He tears up. And I think I like seeing that moment of Michael feeling proud and feeling acknowledged, because he just did have a really hard emotional day of going through something that he thought he was excited at first, and then he was brought so down by Dwight's nitpicking and negativity around the situation. And then now he's brought back up again and being like, okay, I accomplished this thing. I did this big adult thing that is scary and it's financially frightening. And it was just all very cathartic for him to freakishly get this yogurt top medal at the end of his day for his accomplishment, for his big boy job.
Well, that pretty much wraps up both of the A plots and B plots. Mm-hmm. Which means that it's time for us to hand out a Dundee for this episode.
Yeah, this episode, I really like this one that you came up with, Micah. I think it's the best game designer. And so we would put it out to the person who designed the best game in the office. And I think we both agree that Oscar should win for his design of Hateball.
Absolutely.
Because it has quite the epic scoreboard, and it looks like it's been around for a long time. It doesn't seem like it's very hard rules, but it seems very solid. You know, it seems like there are rules.
But yes, there are rules. Mm-hmm. It's got history.
It has a scoring system.
Yeah, I mean, there are probably t-shirts. It's got everything.
It does. So congratulations, Oscar, for your Game Designer Award for Hateball. And hopefully next week we will have some awards for some listeners. If we see some, I don't know, we're going to arbitrarily pick if something comes up into our radar, a cool post on the Incomparable Slack, some fan art, a good review. I don't know, like whatever's out there. So yeah. We want to give the Dundee to listeners as much as we can.
Absolutely. So,
get out there, people. Get busy.
Anywhere you send it to us, something's going to call our name, and we will be happy to award our listeners. I guess that just about wraps it up. It's time for us to stretch and probably put on some muscle rub, because it has been quite the Office Olympics.
It has. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and be sure to follow us on Twitter @tall_beats.
I was going for the Kevin in that situation. I hope that was clear.